For those who like a little history, Father Paul, Deacon Derek, and I were discussing this yesterday. The solemnity of the Epiphany was moved by the U.S. bishops from January 6th to the feast, to the first Sunday after January 1, back in 1984. A very fine pastoral move, but it thus scrambled the traditional counting for the 12 days of Christmas, which count from December 26th to January 6th. However, that actually got scrambled after Vatican II, which established that Christmas time goes from Christmas, December 25th, through to the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord, which is next Sunday. So this year, the days of Christmas from December 25 to January 10th are actually 17. So if you're any songwriters are out there, you can add a few verses to that song and probably make a little extra money, at least for the Catholics. For us, the Feast of the Epiphany is when the Magi arrive to worship and gift the Christ child. Epiphany means manifestation. It's when Christ was first manifested beyond the Jews to the nations, to the rest of the world. It's a beautiful feast of light with the focus on the star that guides the Magi to the Christ in Bethlehem. And by the way, in the Bible, stars are very commonly associated with angels. So if you've ever wondered how the star moved and led them, we don't necessarily have to go through elaborate convolutions trying to find the right comet or the right configurations of stars or planets. The Star of Bethlehem was a heavenly messenger, which we commonly call an angel. An angel full of light and manifestation. Another little interesting tidbit about the readings for this feast is that the Magi observed the star at its rising, which implies at the birth of the Christ child, the birth of Jesus, right? We don't know exactly how long it took them to travel from Persia or wherever they lived to Bethlehem. But it would have been several months at the least. And later in Matthew's gospel, when King Herod realizes that the Magi aren't coming back to betray the Christ child, he calculates that any child born about the time the Magi first saw the star would be no more than 2 years old, which is why he called then, tragically, for the killing of all children in Bethlehem, 2 years old and younger. Now this further explains today, when the Magi arrive in Bethlehem, and we're told that they entered the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother. The house, not the stable or the inn. In other words, when Joseph and Mary arrived in Bethlehem, there was no room for them at the inn. We're told that in Luke's gospel. And so Mary gave birth in one of the set of caves behind the inn where the animals were kept. And now, several months later, who knows exactly, maybe they were staying with relatives of Joseph, or maybe they had even gotten their own house, but they weren't still in the cave behind the inn. Just some fun facts and tidbits, insights there. Two things struck me from the readings for this beautiful feast. The first is the reading from the first reading from Isaiah. And again, the emphasis is on light. Rise up in splendor, Jerusalem, your light has come. The glory of the Lord shines upon you. See, darkness covers the earth, and thick clouds cover the peoples, but upon you the Lord shines, and over you appears his glory. Nations shall walk by your light, and kings by your shining radiance. So besides the richness of the gifts that the Magi bring, this reference to kings walking by the shining radiance of the Christ child is part of the reason why the Magi are often depicted as kings. We heard that also in the responsorial psalm, beautifully sung for us earlier. But what strikes me there, is that the light is not Jerusalem's light. This glorious, shining, radiant light comes from another and shines on Jerusalem. The light and the glory of this feast is not our light and glory. It's Christ. That seems kind of obvious when we say it, but it's good to say it. It's Christ's. The striking thing, though, is first that this light and glory are shown upon us without our deserving it. I didn't do anything to deserve this. But secondly, even more so, once it shines on us, we're transformed. It changes us. The light shines on Jerusalem, and therefore, kings walk by Jerusalem's shining radiance. When the light shines on us, we become radiant with the radiance of Christ. Hold on to that. Don't forget that. The second thing that struck me is in the gospel. The Magi go to King Herod and they ask, "Where's the newborn king of the Jews?" And Herod is greatly troubled at the news. But in what way was he troubled? Why was he upset? I've always presumed that he was troubled at the news of a rival king. Get the army out, right? But this new king is a newborn. And Herod was already an old man, close to death. It seems like he probably died like in the next year or two. Why should he be threatened by a newborn who wouldn't be a rival for many years? But look at what Herod does. He assembles the chief priests and the scribes, and he inquires of them where the Christ is to be born. Not where's this king going to be born or was born, but where's the Christ to be born? Without any other warning, Herod immediately thinks that this newborn is the Christ, the Messiah. He's not just nervous about some potential rival to his throne. He wants to stop the Christ from coming. This is a deeply anti-God move on Herod's part. Herod was not operating only on a human or political level. Sadly, that's where I was. Herod is operating on the level of the heavenly powers. Although tragically, he's chosen the dark powers instead of the angelic powers of light. I think all too often, you and I can operate on a merely human or even political level as well, when there are much bigger things going on. And because of that, we miss the light. We fail to let the heavenly light shine on our hearts and souls. And so we then miss out on becoming the radiant sons and daughters that Christ came to make of us. We fail to become radiant lights for others when we stay on an earthly level. You and I are more than just earthly. We live and work on human and political levels. Absolutely. But we also live and move in heavenly and angelic levels. We're spiritual as well as physical. Don't let Herod be the only one who gets that. So here's the little bit of homework for the week. Throughout this week, just let yourself wonder about how God sees your day. As I am going through this very seemingly human drudge work, whatever it might be, how's God seeing this? Wonder about how your activities look from that heavenly perspective. That's one way of opening your lives to the heavenly light, to let that heavenly light shine down and begin to transform us.